You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the edition covering the 19th of December 2013 to the 1st of January 2014, the final podcast of the year. Merry Christmas to you all. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by Deputy News Editor John Morgan and reporters Jack Grove and David Matthews. Before I tell you what's coming up on this week's edition, I should congratulate David and John, who were both honoured at the CIPR Education Journalism Awards at the Houses of Parliament earlier this month, John being named runner-up in category for Outstanding National Education Journalism and David taking the top award for Outstanding Higher Education Journalism. Many congratulations to you both. It must have been quite a good night.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise, but yeah, most chuffed.
Yeah, really pleased.
No, it's also Paul Jump, our Deputy Features Editor, was runner-up in the HE Journalism category, so plenty of cause for celebration. But back to this week's magazine, we don't want your heads getting too big. Record numbers of students from poor families are going to university according to the latest UCAS figures, with undergraduate enrolments bouncing back after last year's slump. We'll have more of that in a moment. Margaret Hodge, Chair of the Public's Accounts Committee, is not one to mince her words, as she demonstrated last week with an uncompromising grilling of two senior civil servants who were answering questions about student loan repayments. John Morgan has details on that shortly. And every year, universities spend hundreds of millions of pounds on bursaries and other financial incentives to help disadvantaged students with the cost of higher education. But new research suggests that the very people they're designed to help have almost no idea what the word bursary means. David will have more on that soon. But first, ostensibly good news, Jack. UCAS figures showing an increase in the number of students from poorer backgrounds applying to university.
Yes, this is the data from UCAS, which sums up what happened in their last admission cycle. Okay, it shows that For the 2013 cycle, there were almost 500,000 full-time undergraduates accepted into higher education institutions, 495,600, and that's higher than in 2011, which was the final year before tuition fee, the higher 9K tuition fees came in. So this is good news, and David Willetts is saying that it's a vindication of his reforms, and it shows that people haven't been put off going to university by the £9,000 fees. And there's also more good news in that the more numbers from poorer backgrounds are going into higher education. So lots of good news on that score.
Yeah, I think we can actually hear what David Willetts had to say about the figures if we just take a listen now.
I think overall this is pretty good news. This if you compare the evidence in these figures with the scares and warnings when we introduced the new system that people who put off applying from university, especially kids from poorer backgrounds, this shows that, thank heavens, those fears were misplaced.
So yeah, obviously he's banging the drum, it is good news, but some of the grades that the offers were made had lower grades, is that right? So even though there's more people applying, the UCAS points tariffs that these offers are being made for are down, is there a quality issue there?
Well, The issue is actually that in 2011 you had a record number of applications and you had very high number of acceptances. Here in this year we've got fewer numbers applying to university but more people going. What that means is that universities are having to reach maybe a little bit further down to get the students to fill their places. And in the past, people who went to some of the higher tariff universities generally had to have ABB, BBB, but now we're seeing that some of these very prestigious universities are taking students with BBC, and I think 17% of all 18-year-olds going into universities which were considered higher tariff universities had either BBB or worse. And that's a proportion that's gone up massively, so it's just a consideration of whether, are all the people going to university, this is going to open that perennial question, are all the people that's going to university, do they have the grades to take advantage of it? And that's been a question that's been going on really probably since the Robbins report back 50 years ago.
Yeah, particularly pertinent now, of course, with the forthcoming removal of the cap on student numbers in the UK. Interesting stuff. No, the full story's on page 6 if you wish to read it in its entirety. Now, no one likes to be pulled up before a committee. John Morgan, you were in Westminster last week where two civil servants were grilled by the Public Accounts Committee on the subject of students' loans. They didn't have much fun.
No, that's right. It turned into a bit of an embarrassing episode for them. So this was Martin Donnelly, who's the permanent secretary at BIS, the top civil servant there, and Mick Laverty, who's the chief executive of the student loans company. They were appearing before MPs on the Public Accounts Committee after a highly critical National Audit Office report on how the student loan system is run. And Margaret Hodge, the chair of the committee, really got stuck into them. Basically wanted Donnelly to supply some of the key figures behind BIS's estimates about the proportion of student loans that will be repaid in the future. And didn't get very far with him and told him that she was amazed he hadn't got these figures and said that she knew the figures. Why didn't he know it? He's the boss of the department. Got round to just saying pathetic at one stage and
muttered Jesus under her breath as well.
That was probably the high pitch of her fury was when she was asking Martin Donnelly for figures on what proportion of graduates are women, which is quite key to how much money you're going to get back from the loan system, because women tend to earn less. And he was came up blank, and she just muttered Jesus. Well, I'm surprised it made onto the official transcript of the of the committee, but it did, because she actually took it back and said, I shouldn't have said that.
But it's still there.
But it is there, officially on the record.
My favourite thing that came out of this session is that the student loan company's telephone system can't handle international prefixes.
So it can't
automatically dial students who are living overseas and not paying back their loans.
Yeah, so it seems.
I suppose maybe... it was a bit of a grilling, but I wonder if there's anyone that Margaret Hodge hasn't sort of castigated on the Public Accounts Committee. She's not known for holding back, I suppose. Is she?
Yeah, it is theatre, and she does play a role, and you can predict exactly how she's going to act. But I think she was, really reaching a pitch on this occasion. And it does, although it is theatre, it does highlight quite an important point, which is that there are real genuine concerns about some of the estimates behind the loan future of the loan system, which is crucial to the future of the whole funding system for higher education.
I'd say that Margaret Hodge is something of a national treasure. That term is often overused, but I'd put her in that category.
I think it's even a verb now. People get hodged.
Oh, very good. David, let's move this along. You were in Wales last week attending the Society for Research into Higher Education's annual conference in Newport. One bit of research caught your eye, and it's all about bursaries.
Yes, that's right. I mean, as sort of HE nerds, we use the term bursary all the time. So obviously it's a grant given to students with lower income families to help them with the costs of higher education. However, this piece of research was done by Stephen Jones, who's based at the University of Manchester. And in September 2012, just as the new fees regime was coming in, he went and interviewed about 200 students in years 10 and 11 at three quite deprived schools. These students were sort of on academic track to be able to go to university, so their results were high enough that they'd be able to go on and get decent A-levels and so on. And he asked them, what does bursary mean? And extraordinarily, only one of them actually knew what the word bursary meant. And, bursaries, among other financial incentives, are given to... these are exactly the kind of pupils that would hope to benefit from them at university and make it seem less financially onerous.
So the language being used is basically inappropriate for these people.
I mean, or
is it patronising to say that, or
I was thinking back, and I wonder whether when I was, 14 or 15, whether I would have known what bursary. I mean, it's a bit of a sort of fusty word, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think at least maybe you should use the word scholarship or something like that, which has or grant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
is it Professor Jones? Did you say his name was?
Dr.
Jones. Does he suggest any alternatives? Does he have any answers?
Not really. I mean, he just says that a lot of this widening participation
talk is basically speaking a language these students don't understand. Although, yeah, as you say, I mean, maybe it is a bit patronising to say it's only those students. I mean, maybe it's just students of that age don't know what the word bursary means. I mean, the other slightly alarming thing to come out of this as well was, you know, he looked at, you know, whether there's a sort of social cost for kind of more working class students to go to university. And particularly a lot of the boys in this school basically said going to university, you kind of become a less authentic version of yourself. You lose some of your identity. You know, you'd come back for the holidays and your friends or family would say, oh, you think you're better than us now. And in fact, a few of them had known people who had got lots of stick from their families after going to university. So it was all slightly depressing research, basically. I mean, the figures that Jack presented are very encouraging for widened participation, but actually it suggests that, I guess, the kind of language and even culture of higher education is either misunderstood or just looked on as very alien and you know, perhaps you're sort of selling out if you go to university, almost if you're from some backgrounds, I don't know.
I thought it was quite striking, the bits about, you know, how hard it is for people to actively choose to be, you know, different from their families, although to, you know, to most people it seemed like, you know, it's a really sensible choice to go to university. That is probably something that isn't really understood in widening participation debates and widening access, that, you know, you have, it is very hard for people to choose to be different from their families.
It's, I mean, I suppose if you're from a sort of middle class background, I mean, what's the equivalent of going to university then? It's basically joining like a sort of hunting. It's basically trying to join the upper classes, isn't it? Yeah. It's like well, if you said I'm going to go off for 3 years and join a hunt club and dine in tails and
the bullying
talk
thing,
almost,
I've set my sights on.
I think it's the same thing.
Exactly.
You'd come back and you think, and everyone's like, why on earth are you acting like this? Well, it's just, I mean, if you see HE as a sort of fairly middle class thing, then it's the same if you're from a working class background.
Absolutely. Interesting reading again. Before we go, the cover feature, just very quickly, John, you went over to China a little while back and you're reporting what you found. What's the gist?
So the basic idea I was looking at is looking at the huge investment in China that China's putting into its universities, and it has this real target to establish world-class universities and compete with, you know, world leaders like the US and UK. Can China do that, you know, without introducing some reforms along the lines of giving universities more autonomy and reforms along the lines of introducing more academic freedom? Some people would argue that, you know, to truly become world-class, Chinese universities would have to become more like the Western institutions that we've always seen as being the ones that are traditionally great. But
academic freedoms and...
Yeah, yeah. But other people would argue, you know, such is the level of China's investment and the strategy and the talent that, you know, don't expect that China's universities will follow the Western model, but they will be, you know, very soon highly competitive.
Very good. Well, it seems a good place to end it. That's the last podcast of this year, so thanks very much for listening. We'll be back in January. You can, of course, comment on any of the stories we've discussed online at timeshighereducation.co.uk or on any of our social media channels, of which you're very familiar, I'm sure. But that's all for now, and thanks for listening to this week's issue review.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.